Aren't you glad that I'm always here to tell you all of the ways in which you are wrong?
I don't know how I lived without it. Like, it was the very miserable seven first years of my life. And then finally, I was reunited with someone who can tell me what I'm
wrong. My first words were actually...
wrong.
Wrong.
In the times of brick phones, Tamagotchis, and curtain bangs, the 90s kids cried out for a badass. She was Xena, the warrior princess. The kicks, the moves, the nostalgia, the queerness. Xena made us gay.
Hello.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Alice.
And you're listening to Xena Made Me Gay. So, today we are going to be talking about episode 7 of season 2 called Intimate Stranger. And we're gonna find out who this intimate stranger is.
Actually, there's a couple of options.
Yes, I agree that... it's open to interpretation, this one, unlike Giant Killer, which is about someone who kills a giant. Before we get into all of the semantics of who this intimate stranger is, let me recap the episode for those of you that haven't seen it in a while. So we start in this Inception-esque sequence of dreams within dreams that Xena is having, all of which revolve around the guilt that she has around the way Callisto died and whether it was a murder on Xena's part.
Yep.
Finally, she actually wakes up, clearly still very distressed. And we find out that she and Gabrielle are following the rest of Callisto's crew to bring them to justice. We then see that Joxer also decided to do that. And of course, he gets himself captured. He gets beaten up quite a bit, but Xena arrives just in time. So the baddies scatter and Joxer is freed, albeit in a very undignified way.
Aww.
He asks Xena not to let him fall on his face, after which she lets him fall on his face.
Yeah, it's nicely done because the camera is situated on the floor and like we see basically Joxer fall on his face into the camera.
Yeah. It's really well done. So that night, Callisto suddenly appears in front of Xena when Xena dozes off for a moment. And as Xena follows Callisto, she somehow... slips from that dream into a different state, which we find out is the underworld. So Callisto and Ares are there, and it appears that they've teamed up. Ares must have picked Callisto as the next best thing after Xena to be his partner in taking over the world. And the two of them try to capture Xena, and she... ends up spinning into a rock. I know this sounds stupid, but that's because it also looks stupid.
I mean, they try to make it look like it's just the natural motion of someone spinning out of control, but no,
literally... spinning out of control is a metaphor. Nobody actually spins when they're
It's like a physical manifestation of spinning out of control.
But like, that's not how it looks like.
It looks like a dance move.
But like, you know this meme lady, this blonde lady that is supposed to teach you how to dance to electronic music.
No.
There is this meme of this blonde, and she appears quite tall. Also, this is the blonde tall woman who's like, "This is how you dance to." I don't remember what specific genre of electronic music it is to this music, and it's the weirdest thing you've ever seen.
Okay. we're all gonna check this out, but I don't think that if you haven't seen the episode, you can imagine like the moves that Xena makes, because it's really, it's like she's spinning and then she smashes her whole body
into a rock,
face against the rock.
Yeah, it's there is no explanation. After that, Xena immediately gets up from sleep. She wakes Gabrielle up and tells her that they have to go to Amphipolis because she has this inexplicable feeling that Callisto is going there and she's going to kill Xena's mother. And Xena also tells Gabrielle that they should leave Joxer behind because he'd only get himself killed. They do take Argo, though, and Argo seems to be really distressed for reasons that are unclear. Before they leave, though, Xena steps out of the building, sees Ares, walks up to him, and starts making out with him.
Yep.
And then Ares welcomes Callisto back. So we find out that using Xena's guilt, Ares and Callisto managed to trap her in the underworld, in the body of Callisto. And then Callisto herself managed to escape Tartarus and land in Xena's body, mm-hmm. in the regular world. So at this point, it's going to get really confusing, but just keep in mind that whenever I say Xena, I will refer to Xena who is stuck in Tartarus in the body of Callisto. And whenever I say Callisto, I will refer to Callisto who has snuck into the world of the living in Xena's body.
Yeah. It's really confusing when we're just talking about it. But I would say that in the episode itself, the actresses did a really nice job. Mm. And we clearly understand who is who. And I'm going to talk about that later. But like, I was never confused for a second. Like, the moment you see Xena, you're like, oh, okay, I know what's going on.
We then see Callisto walking with Gabrielle and Argo. And then she suddenly turns to Gabrielle and tells her that whenever they encounter Callisto again, Gabrielle should be the one to kill her.
Surprise!
Yeah, that confuses Gabrielle quite a lot. She can't quite understand why Xena would say that. And later on, we see that Callisto actually is coaching Gabrielle on how to kill herself. You know, like she looks like Xena, so only we know that she's coaching Gabrielle on how to kill herself. And it's a very interesting parallel to exactly what Gabrielle was asking for a couple of episodes ago, except by this point, Gabrielle doesn't want it and is really, really perturbed by the whole thing. It's a very interesting parallel that they've created there. Back in Tartarus, Xena tries to explain to Hades that, well, she's indeed Xena, and she just happens to look like Callisto. And after a few tries, she does manage to, but for some reason, Hades decides to be super annoying, and he only lets Xena get back to the world of the living for one day, and she has to remain in the wrong body. Why? Cause.
Gods love entertainment. It's the only way I can explain it.
I guess. So, meanwhile, Callisto decides to fuck with Xena by gravely wounding Argo. Not killing Argo, but gravely wounding her so that, I guess, Xena has to put Argo down herself. But what Callisto doesn't know,
yeah,
is that Xena is the greatest doctor who's ever lived. So Xena gets to Argo in time. She puts some natural herbal moisturizer on Argo's wound.
Because, yeah, it literally looks like she comes to a tree. She cuts a tree open, like a branch open with her sword, and then, like, a white liquid really looking like some...
Like body lotion.
Body, like liquid body milk, like body lotion, starts pouring out of the tree, and she collects it with a bunch of leaves and just puts it on Argo, and that's it.
Yeah. Argo is immediately healed. Like, she's great. At no point are we worried. Like, the stakes have never been lower.
Aww.
And interestingly, Joxer also shows up and tries defending Argo, thinking that Xena is Callisto, which is very sweet. And Xena does explicitly recognize that, and she tells him. It's a really, really heartwarming moment.
Yes, I cannot believe how much I love Joxer now. Yeah, I'm like, watching it now.
Callisto, meanwhile, goes to her former crew, kills her right-hand man, the one that had a crush on her. And, of course, everyone just assumes that who they think is Xena is their new leader. They're just like, yep, cool, works for us. Callisto tells her people to attack Amphipolis, take every single person hostage without killing anyone, and to bring all the hostages to a cave where they're hanging out. And the plan is to burn them all alive as Xena watches, sort of as a parallel to what Callisto experienced as a child. At that point, Ares shows up and he's like, this doesn't make sense with my fantasy. And Callisto's like, well, tough titties. It's happening.
Yeah. Ares is like, he looks really hot in this episode, but he cannot do anything. Like, at the very beginning, he's like, yeah, I've chosen another warrior who is going to be more, like, into my cause than you. And then this warrior also completely fucks Ares over.
Yeah. And he's like, now I'm mad. Yeah. So I'm gonna
leave.
Walk away. Yes.
Like, wow, that was really frightening.
Oh no. So Xena does get to Callisto, they fight, but at the deciding moment, Gabrielle appears, and Gabrielle still doesn't know that the switcheroo happened, so she threatens Xena with a dagger, logically assuming it's Callisto. But Xena does manage to prove that it's her, and Gabrielle stands down. Then Xena hits Callisto with a poison dart that puts Callisto to sleep, and somehow they both end up in the underworld again that way. The mechanism there is not entirely clear.
Maybe with the help of Hades, we don't know.
Sure. then Xena brings out all the people that Callisto has killed, as well as Callisto's own mother, who's not mad at Callisto, just disappointed.
Yeah.
And shockingly, all of that works, and Callisto feels guilty, which helps trap her back in Tartarus. And so Xena goes back to the world of the living, except the body swap remains. Needless to say, this is very weird for Gabrielle.
Yeah.
And we kind of end there. So it remains to be seen how this storyline gets resolved.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like the longest story arc going from series to series. Like, of course, we do not erase the events of the past. Like, we know that Perdiccas, Gabrielle's husband, is dead. And, like, it's not like we forget about it, like, episode to episode. But usually...
As much as we want to.
As much as we want to, yeah. But usually it's like, oh, like, this episode is kind of serious. And then the next one is going to be, like, Warrior Princess Triumph is going to be, like, kind of... funny, and like it's not like the story seamlessly continues, but here the story has to continue seamlessly because we have Xena and Callisto's body, so like,
yeah,
what's gonna happen?
yeah true. If I remember correctly, they had to do it because Lucy Lawless broke her hip.
Oh, really interesting.
Yeah, so they were like, shit, we need to like minimize the amount of screen time for Lucy while she's recovering.
Aw, I mean, not bad. It really seems that the showrunners just generally like Hudson Lake. Like, she appears in a lot of extra episodes. Like, there are a couple of minor characters or, like, minor, like, actors in minor roles that keep reappearing. Like, Carl Urban basically played...
I would say that's a minor role. It's a supporting role, but it's not minor.
I mean... I would say that like there are only two major roles, and maybe jocks are kinda like 30% there.
But it's not just major and minor. I would say it's like main supporting and then
maybe
minor.
Maybe like, but like as much as I want to think otherwise, Caesar appears in maybe 4 episodes out of how many? So yeah, it's not a big role, but like this actor keeps coming back, and I think that's actress who plays Kalista also keeps coming back. She's not about playing different characters, she's just about the screenwriters finding ways to insert Kalista back into the story. Like, aww. As you said before, it's like the return of Kalista part 1, the return of Kalista part 10.
Yeah, she just likes returning. What can we do?
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I like her.
So, let's discuss some notable moments of the episode. And the first thing I want to say, because I have to mention it every time, and it's very exciting every time for me. The boob dagger is back
yes!
again!
Yes! I also was so glad to see the boob dagger.
I completely forgot how reliably recurring the boob dagger is.
Right? Yeah. Which basically, the boob dagger was conceived as a joke at some point. So, like, I'm very impressed. Like,
I know. Yeah. I was like, ha ha, boob dagger. And then it just... now it's, like, almost as much of a part and parcel of Xena's arsenal as the chakram.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this time it's used by Kalisto to encourage Gabrielle to murder. She literally ties the dagger to the end of Gabrielle's staff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Gabrielle uses to threaten Xena when she thinks that the person in Kalisto's body is Kalisto, as one logically would.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when you see someone's body, you assume the person in that body corresponds to the body. It's just like, I don't know about you all, personally, that's the way I tend to go.
Yeah, you know.
So I can't quite blame Gabrielle for making that mistake.
Yeah, it's true. Speaking of Gabrielle, I will give a lot of praise to the actresses.
Please do.
Coming back to Gabrielle, in terms of just like how her character develops.
Yeah.
I haven't rewatched this episode in a while. It was one of those that I don't think I saw a lot of times, and I did not remember what exactly happens. I just knew the main trick with like switching of the bodies. Mm-hmm. And when Gabrielle was quote unquote consoling Xena in her dream, when she was saying, just because you did not show Kalisto the same mercy that other people showed you, that doesn't make you a murderer. I swear they got me. They tricked me, because then we go to like, well, if you like behaved with, if Hercules behaved with you how you behaved with Kalisto, you'd be dead now. Mm-hmm. Like, then I was like, okay, this is not Gabrielle. But before, I was like thinking that that's kind of like this passive aggressive way of speaking and this high horse that Gabby usually has. So it did not occur to me that it's like something out of character. It was like slightly harsh, but like I could imagine her saying that actually.
Yeah, and also I would say that it's factually true.
Yes, but not a very nice thing to say to your friend who's suffering.
True. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Speaking of things that are nice to say, I absolutely loved this moment when Callisto has gotten back to her crew, has killed her right-hand man, and is now making all of these arrangements to hurt Xena, you know? And she tells one of her men, okay, we're gonna wait for Callisto to get here and then we're gonna burn everyone. Understand? And the man is like, no, but we'll do it.
Yeah, I also like this moment.
It's
like,
so funny.
This is employee of the month behavior.
I know. I loved it so much. I loved it so much that they included this little detail of where they demonstrate just how little understanding there sometimes is when you're just following orders. And you're like, don't get it. We'll do it.
100%. Yeah. I really, really loved it also. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I really loved is when Callisto is communicating with Ares in Xena's body. Like, first they make out, and then at some point, like maybe in another scene, they start sparring. They're fighting with their swords. And I don't know how, but they made that sword fight look very sexual. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah, I don't know whether I saw that.
but it was like they were talking and Callisto in Xena's body was like making pauses between what she says. She's like, and then smack with the sword. You will smack. Do this, smack. And like that was very BDSM. I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah, I see what you mean. I see what you mean. Was that before or after they actually fucked?
I think it's right before. I think it leads up to that because she's
that's
like
the foreplay.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's like, and you promised me satisfaction. And he's like, oh, I did.
Oh, right. Which is interesting because we've talked before about how Callisto seems to be very definitely aro, probably asexual.
Yeah.
And even though we do see her have sex in this episode, I don't think that necessarily disproves it. Because
I agree.
It seems pretty obvious that she just makes a strategic decision to keep Ares on her side until the moment that she decides she just doesn't need him anymore.
Yes, and also when they kiss or like when they talk, she seems really giddy, as Callisto often does, but this giddiness has nothing to do with Ares, and we kind of sense it. Like, she's hyped about something, but she's hyped about her plan. She's hyped about being able to hurt Xena.
Right.
And going a little further, I would say that Ares is into it. I would say that, like, that's Ares' thing, maybe.
So, actually, I think what he might be getting out of it is that he essentially gets to fuck Xena in two different ways. Like, he gets to fuck Xena's body. I'm sure he has no complaints about that. And also, like, Callisto's plan is to fuck Xena over. So maybe he's also enjoying that part.
Yeah. I would say that, like, the plan where it becomes all about revenge, he's like, oh, no, that's gone too far. But that's it.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Yeah, and of course, when Callisto talks about satisfaction, like, that's not the kind of satisfaction she means. Ares, being Ares, makes his assumptions, but...
Yeah.
No, that's not what she meant, baby boy.
No, that's true. And, like, again, maybe that's reading something into it, but I've watched a couple of videos of a creator who is asexual, and she was talking about, like, her experience and that she had sex and she even could take pleasure from sex. It's just not exactly how other people feel it. So I think that, like, Callisto is, like, she's on a roll. She's having fun, but just, like, it's never the end goal. And she's definitely aromantic because, like, she feels a lot of feels for Xena, but that's not love.
You don't think? But, like, it's interesting because Xena is definitely, like, the most important person in her life. Like, she's so singularly obsessed with Xena in a way that's very homo, just not sexual.
Yeah.
Homicidal.
Homicidal, yeah. That sounds right. But, like, you're right, like... With Ares, for example, you could see that she doesn't give two shits about him. Like, she absolutely is just using him.
Makes no difference to her whether he's in or out. Sorry.
So again, I like that we have so many assumptions and theories, although none of the things are spoken of the things that we're discussing. So I think that, like, again, that just is about how great the acting is in this episode. Like, particularly Lucy Wallace. I think, like, everybody's good, but she's phenomenal at playing Callisto. Like, wow. And, like, again, as I said, like, when she wakes up and she wakes Gabrielle up and, like, her fingers make this, like, weird shape.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's Callisto. Like, instantly, like,
yeah the physicality is just so different
and so there, and like that takes, like, a lot of skill to study another actor that closely. And even her voice sounds different, like both of their voices sound different. Like, I think Hudson Lake, just her voice becomes deeper when she's speaking as Xena, but with Lucy Lawless, she just takes on all of the mannerisms, the laughter, the scream, like, everything is spot on. It's just, like, so perfect.
Bringing back my favorite recurring rubric of Xena having influenced all of the media that has ever existed since since its airing. I think it is very possible that John Travolta and Nicolas Cage, as they were preparing for Face Off, which started filming in early 1997.
Uh-huh.
And this episode aired in late 1996. So very, very close, would be super fresh in their minds. I think it is very possible that, you know, they studied Lucy's performance and took notes, and that's why the acting in Face Off was also top tier.
Totally plausible to me. Yeah, kudos to the two actors who swap roles. But I also, again, want to say that, like, Gabrielle's role is also kind of tough in this one, because, for example, at the very end, when all is good and, like, we know that it's Xena in Callisto's body, and they already talked about that it's strange, so now it should be, like, this good moment of reconciliation, Xena touches Gabrielle's shoulder and we can see Gabrielle, like, physically
recoil
and flinch from this touch and how weird it is to her. And I thought that, like, whoa, yeah, that's very emotional. This moment I remember upon my first watch, because, like, it was so visceral.
Yeah, that was really good. But right after that, what Xena says is, instead of thinking about Callisto when you see me, think about Perdiccas and how much you loved him.
That doesn't make any sense.
That makes no sense. Like, first of all, what? What? Second of all, that seems to be the least helpful association, because Perdiccas is the most painful association with Callisto's body. Yeah. That seems completely counterintuitive. Like,
I mean, the actors did a phenomenal job. The screenwriters, on the other hand,
it's
not every time.
So baffling. I was like, literally just say, like, think about, you know, who I am and how much I care about, like, anything. But, like, think about how much you love Perdiccas. Like, what the fuck does he have to do with anything?
I don't know. I think they're trying to make Fetch happen, you know? Like, they're trying to make this hetero romance happen, because at the very end, Gabriel is like, oh, I am going to tell you a story that I dreamt of Perdiccas. I sing of Perdiccas, the boy that I knew and the man that I loved. It was painful. Coming up to the themes and main things that we take away from the episode, I would say that what stood out to me was Callisto's arc with Ares, because it was very classically done. Like, it could be in a tragedy, because he's like, I'm going to take you out of Tartarus. I'm going to give you whatever you want. I'm a god. I am going to give you an army. I'm going to give you anything that you want. You're going to, like, rule the world with me. You literally have everything. And Callisto's like, yeah, sure. But I want to revenge Xena and, like, gather her village in a cave and burn them alive and, like, derive pleasure from that. And he's like, well, you have to, like, avoid Xena for one day, like, she's not getting out of Tartarus, like, just for one day, like, leave that alone. And she's like, nope, I cannot. That is Fatum to me, like, Fatum, right, in a way that, like, you cannot escape your own demons, sort of thing. Right?
Yeah. I thought that was very well done. How I think it must be clear to Callisto that Ares is making a valid point, but she just doesn't care. It just, that's not why she came back, even. Like, she came back for Xena, and if Xena just gets trapped in Tartarus forever without her ever getting this sweet, sweet satisfaction, as she calls it, what's the point, even?
Yeah, because, like, she's absolutely obsessed. And I remember when we were studying the classics in the university, like, there was a lot of discussion of, like, why do people behave like that? Because it's not rational behavior, but usually it's written in a way that you understand that they're completely obsessed and completely all consumed. I was trying to kind of, like, find a parallel, and, like, the closest thing that I found was Medea, because she has a line that reads, I understand what evil is, but my fury is stronger than my reason. I think, like, it fits here, because Callisto not only knows what she's giving up, she also understands completely that that's basically self-destruction on her part, but she doesn't care. She's just on a roll. That's it.
And I think it helps that Callisto generally is very into self-destruction.
Basically, from the moment we first saw her,
so it's even less of an issue for her.
It's more like Ares just, like, completely misread her.
She
cannot give him what he wants.
Oh, no. Maybe he just got lonely.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I think that's another kind of big theme of this episode, is gods being kind of passive observance in the lives of mortals, because we have basically two gods appear there. I was very happy to see that Hades is played by the same actor.
Aww.
Because as a child, I loved the story of Orpheus and Eurydice and Hades and Persephone so much that when I saw Hades portrayed in a TV show, I was like, oh, yay, 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 I love him. He's my favorite guy.
Baby girl. Such baby girl behavior.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, I had like a minor crush on this actor. I still think that the casting is good. He has like those haunting eyes. Like, I think it's a good match for Hades. But that being said, like, he does essentially nothing. He's the god of the underworld, and he cannot, first of all, understand like that a soul is in the wrong body.
Yeah, that was baffling. Like, right? Sweetie, how are you so clueless, baby?
Yeah, but yeah, and like, he helps Xena a little bit, but just a little bit, because like, it seems like he cannot do much. And with Ares is the same thing. Like, he's also easy on the eyes. I think that this Ares that we see in this episode with longer hair and that rocker vest, I think that's the best sort of Ares that we're gonna get throughout the whole series.
Interesting. Okay.
You don't think so?
I don't know. I think I prefer season one Ares a little bit. With the slightly shorter hair.
Shorter hair? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a matter of preference. Like, here he looks like an 80s rock star, and I kind of dig it.
Yeah, I think it's just leaning a little bit too heavily into the contemporariness of the hairstyle.
Yeah. But yeah, that being said, he also does nothing, and like, he can threaten, and he can like say, well, it's not what we agreed on, room.
Okay, your interpretation of whiny Hades is my favorite.
Yeah, but like, he cannot do anything. And I don't know, it kind of doesn't make sense, but on the other hand, it really does make sense, because I think it really is close to the ancient Greek gods that we see in myths. They also can be tricked. They also don't know a lot of things. They also fight and are petty with each other. So it really seemed like, yeah, that's legit god behavior.
Yeah. I mean, so you kept saying that they can't do much. Mm-hmm. And for me, that part is unclear. Like, they can do much, or they can be bothered to do much. I feel like there's an important distinction there. And I think in this episode, it's very much ambiguous.
True.
But I would say in this episode, Hades gives can't be bothered, and Ares gives like can't, because it's impossible for some reason.
Yeah, it's just interesting to me that like, he kind of gets sort of angry at the end, but no one suffers from the anger of the god of war.
Yeah. He just throws a little tantrum, but yeah, like, and quietly
and walks away. That's so sort of sweet.
I was going to say something that a toddler would do, but like, a toddler would cause chaos.
Yeah.
a toddler would break shit. Speaking of toddlers, someone who is surprisingly growing at a very fast pace and in an admirable way.
Yeah.
From toddler to a real man is Joxer.
Yes.
Girl, what the fuck? This is turning into a Joxer fan podcast.
Right? Like, I'm shocked that I like him so much.
Yeah, and like, in this episode, he just gets to show such valiant sides of himself, the way that he pursues Callisto's crew, knowing, I think, pretty pretty well that it's dangerous and he might get captured. Trying to defend Argo from Callisto, knowing very well how that can end for him.
Yeah.
That's just impressive. Like, I'm, wow, good job, Joxer.
Yeah. I'm super impressed, but I'm also, I'm trying to understand why I didn't like him so much when I was a teen, and I like him so much now. And I think that now I like him because he gives like a human perspective to what's going on. His reactions are very contemporary and very on par with like an ordinary person in those kind of circumstances. Like, it seemed to me when I was a teen, like it's just like, oh, he's like a weaky. to quote Fleabag. but now he just seems like he's like a stand-in for me, essentially, like any normal person who would who would react in these circumstances. And
I mean, a little dumber.
I mean, yeah, but also we don't know how we would react like in extreme danger. Like, I don't know, definitely.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think
maybe not like still, Joxer.
Yes, like I think like we are giving Joxer the praise he absolutely fully 100% deserves. That being said, I don't think we're being Delulu here about his intellectual abilities.
No, that's all true, but like again, what absolutely drove me mad when I was a teen, I think, are the things that I'm enjoying now, like his naivete and like his vulnerability. I think we already compared him to Don Quixote once, and I think that like he has that quality, and Don Quixote is like famously we laugh at him, but he's also a tragic figure, and right. I think that it kind of peeks through once in a while for me here, and I'm enjoying it.
yeah amazing. Who knew, right?
Who knew, yeah.
And the last thing I wanted to bring up as kind of a more overarching theme is Callisto and whether or not she actually felt guilt there at the end when she got trapped in Tartarus. Because, like, she's pretty clearly a psychopath. Like, I think that seems to be a pretty fitting description for how she behaves, how she thinks, at least to me. And I even did some, like, 3 minutes of research.
Okay, I did too. I want to know what you found out first.
Okay, so it seems like it's not impossible for psychopath to feel guilt. It just the consequences of their actions are a lot more removed in their understanding of their actions than for people who are not psychopaths. So at some point, if they find out like, oh, I really, really hurt someone, they can be like, oh shit. But as they were doing that thing, it just completely was not part of their thought process. That's what I found out. What did you find out?
So I was thinking whether Callisto is a psychopath. And I was thinking maybe Callisto, hot take, is a sociopath. Because, like, again, in my teenage years, I did some research on sociopaths. I found them fascinating.
Yep.
Because I had a character who I thought was a sociopath.
Oh, I see. Like a character that you created.
Yeah. See, the LARPing character. But like, they're, as far as I understand, like sociopaths and psychopaths, they're like close, but as far as I understand, psychopaths, the reason for their emotional response, abnormal emotional response, is more in the chemical structure of their brain.
Hmm.
And in sociopaths, actually, it's more often due to trauma, which fits with Callisto. And sociopaths, they do feel emotions.
Oh, psychopaths also feel emotions.
Yes, but like I would say that like psychopaths are more calm and calculated in how they act, and sociopaths are more irrational, are quicker to be angry, and they're closer to how I would say like a run of the mill person is functioning. For example, in sociopaths, they have this, like, they get very, very attached, emotionally attached to one particular person. And that could be like, they're willing to protect that person, they're very loyal to that person, but they also can lash out, and they also can, like, that could turn into somewhat of an obsession. And I think that also kind of fits with Callisto's relationship with Xena. And sociopaths are like, I think like they could feel guilt like easier than psychopaths, but with them it's like not always like reasoning and consequence. Like they can feel guilt for something and still keep doing that.
Interesting.
So that was my 3 minute research.
Okay. And so all that is to say, you do think that Callisto genuinely felt some guilt there?
I would say, like, in terms of just how the episode was structured and that nothing was leading to it, it was a little bit deus ex machina for me. It was a little bit, right? Like,
it felt like it happened because the plot demanded it more than it made sense for it to happen.
Yeah, it was like, here you go, a solution.
Now go spin into a rock.
Yeah. But I kind of liked some of the aspects of it. Like, I liked how they, for example, showed us Tartarus and the souls in Tartarus, because basically, like, at some point, first Callisto sees her mother, who's disappointed in her, and then Xena's like, oh, here are all the people you killed, essentially, and they also had families, and they have relatives, and it seems that, like, a small zombie apocalypse is happening around Callisto because they're like all charging at her. But I like that they were not aggressive, they were just like idle with those empty facial expressions. And that's how I think in popular culture, that's how we tend to think about Tartarus and the souls in Tartarus. So I thought that was nicely done. And I like that Xena said, like, once Callisto was like starting to hear the voices and starting to get into like the feels of guilt, Xena said, you cannot stop it. Once it begins, it's like a crashing wave. Like, there is some truth to that, I guess. Like, they try to make it as passable as they could. Still, it was a little heavy-handed.
Yeah. I thought the mother was the best part. Like, I believe the mother in terms of Callisto being genuinely perturbed by the fact that the mother is so disapproving of her.
Yeah.
And then all the others, that was harder for me to buy. I almost wish that they flipped the order. I wish they were like, here are all these people you killed, and Callisto's like, yeah, whatever. And then they bring out the mom, and she is kind of the catalyst for Callisto starting to feel that guilt. But oh well. And this brings us to the fun credits, and they follow the classic structure. So they say, Argo was not harmed during the production of this motion picture. However, she is undergoing intensive psychotherapy to help her work through her resentment and feelings of distrust towards Xena. Yeah, at some point, I think they like splash her with water, like in her face.
In the eye.
Yeah.
In the eye of a horsey. I was also disturbed by that.
Of course.
Good to know that she's fine.
Yeah, but she did such a good job, the horse actress. You know, when she was just like lying down there and pretending to be wounded, she did an excellent job. I was very proud of her. So what would you say was the gayest moment of the episode?
It's hard.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a very gay episode.
It's not a very good episode, but hear me out. The gayest, not even the moment, like the gayest theme for me is
theme.
Kalisto wanting to emotionally touch Xena and basically getting off of that while fucking Ares.
Okay. Okay. You know, I see what you're describing. Okay. Yeah. It's like, you know, thinking about your hot crush while you're fucking your boring ass husband.
Yeah. Like
but
that, like
more
that.
Murderous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. I'll stay more straightforward in that sense. I think there's this nice little moment when Xena is still in her old body at the beginning of the episode, and she's about to doze off, but she hasn't yet. She's just standing at a window staring into the void, and Gabrielle comes with a blanket and gently wraps the blanket around Xena and kind of
hugging her in the process.
Yes, kind of lingering with her hands around Xena. It's this like little lingering and the tenderness of the gesture, I would say, would be my gayest moment of the episode.
Aw, that's a sweet one.
Yeah. And how many chakrams out of 10 would you give this episode?
I liked parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say overall, it's still underwhelming for me. So I would give it a 6.
Interesting. I absolutely loved it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's going to be one of those fairly rare occasions where I give a much higher chakram rating than you do. I think if not for the slightly miscalculated guilt thing with Kalisto, and if not for the fucking idiotic Perdiccas final scene, it would have been a 10.
Okay.
And
that's cool.
Because of those annoying things, it's a 9. But I thought it was an excellent episode.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
It really is a rare occasion.
Yeah. First time this season, actually.
But I'm glad that your string of sixes finally...
Oh, stopped. Yes. I mean, I got 3, and you can't get better than 3 sixes. So that brings us to the end of our episode right here.
Mm-hmm.
We will come back soon to discuss episode 8 of season 2 of Xena Warrior Princess. That one will be called 10 Little Warlords.
Okay, I'm excited for this one.
Okay.
This one I remember.
I remember the title, but not what happens.
okay, good. Meanwhile, feel free to drop us a line on our Instagram at @XenaMadeMeGay. We're always really happy to hear from you.
Absolutely. And until then, take care.